Okay, this morning we pick up at Hebrews chapter 5, verse 11. The author of Hebrews had gotten into a discussion of Jesus Christ as being our high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek, and was telling them a few things about him, about his godly fear, about how he offered up supplications and vehement cries to the Father, and he was heard, and how he had to learn obedience through the things which he suffered. Not that he was needed to be disciplined because of any sin or anything like that, but he had to become fit for the office. He had to go through the experience so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest. And then in verse 9, we see that he is now the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him. And the author says, I've got a lot to say about this, and later on he does. But he interrupts himself here because he says that we have much to say. And these things are hard to explain because you have become dull of hearing. So this is where we'll be picking up. Hebrews 5, verses 11 through 14. And we will start over here with Hope. If you can read for us Hebrews 5, verses 11 through 14.
Of whom we have many things to say and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. For when the time ye ought to be teachers, you have need that one teach you again, which be the first principle of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil.
Okay, like I said, the author had been talking about the high priesthood of Jesus Christ and all the wonderful things he has done for us. And then he comes to the realization that these people just aren't going to be able to handle this. He realizes in your notes here that his audience does not have the maturity to comprehend what he wants to say about the priesthood of Jesus Christ. Now, we cover a little bit of this each week, but this was probably read in its entirety in one sitting to the people, to the recipients here. So we may not be able to see from week to week how frustrated this author is with this recipients. But time and time again, he expresses concern and really disgust with their spiritual state. We see here, he says, that they have become dull of hearing. And if you look back in chapter 2, verse 1, we see some frustration even there. After he had gone through and shown how Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was so wonderful, and that he was to be preferred above anything else, that he was much better than anything else in all of creation. He starts out, verse 2, chapter 2 says, therefore we must give the more earnest heed, or pay more close attention to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. So, right off the bat, after showing the superiority of Jesus Christ over everything else, he sees that they have problems. They have not been listening carefully to what they've been hearing, and they were in danger of drifting away. They were becoming negligent. Like I said, you never drift toward God. If you drift, you drift away from God. You drift away from the truth. These people were not listening very carefully. And of course, if you don't listen carefully, you're going to become dull of hearing, just like he says they have now. And then in a couple of verses later in Hebrews 2:3, it says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? He was so concerned that these people were neglecting this great salvation that Jesus Christ had purchased for them. They weren't listening. They were drifting. And they were neglecting this great salvation. And then look at 3:12. The author here expresses concern again. He says, beware, brethren, or look out. Watch out, brethren. Lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. They were in danger of pure, downright unbelief and departing from God. Their spiritual condition is pretty bad in the author's estimation. And then if we look at 4:1, it says, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear, lest any of you seem to have come short of it. He says, y'all are coming short. Remember, we need to persevere. We got a long race. We got a marathon, 26.2 miles. And they were going to come short. They weren't going to reach the finish line. They were going to fall away, in his estimation. And then in 4:11, the author is again concerned. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. He's talking about the Hebrews that came out of Egypt and died in the desert. Their corpses fell in the wilderness. So time after time again, the author has really expressed concern about the spiritual state of these people in many different ways. Now, it seems like here he says, I give up. You know, you can't handle this anymore. Okay, so on your notes, these people had evidently been in the faith for a long time and should be mature Christians capable of giving sound instruction to others. Where he says, by this time, you ought to be teachers. They've been in the faith a long time. They've been in the faith long enough where they should be able to teach others. Now, by teaching, he doesn't mean the office of a teacher, that all of us should be able to stand up here and teach Sunday school or preach or whatever. He's talking about just giving sound instruction to other Christians. They weren't even able to do that. So instead of being able to give sound instruction as mature Christians, they have become dull of hearing. Verse 11. He says, you have become dull of hearing. Now, notice the word become. He didn't say you are dull of hearing. He said you have become dull of hearing. At one time, they weren't that way. But through their laxity, through their neglect of this great salvation, they have become dull of hearing. See?
You know, in a lot of churches today, I can understand that the main reason, I would believe that the main reason, if you're wrong, you can correct me, but I would think that a lot of the condemnation would have to fall on the preachers in a lot of churches today. Now, it's interesting, he does not seem to condemn any of the leaders in this congregation. He's given this rebuke to the rank and file sitting in the pews, and I can understand that to some extent too. But I think today's churches, I would say, the main problem is the preaching, and in most of these congregations today. Although I do recognize there is some personal responsibility. Your thoughts?
What Steve has hit on is nothing new. I mean, look at the priests in Malachi. They were supposed to be able to give sound instruction on the law there. They weren't doing it. And so the most preachers, a lot of preachers, don't teach. They don't really worry about it. They give cute little stories, stuff like that. Fortunately here, we've always been blessed with good preaching. But Rush Denny once made the statement, and I'm just quoting him here. He says, most preaching today is not worth a damn. That was a quote from Rush Denny. And Rush Denny's right. Steve is right. The leaders aren't doing what they're supposed to do, generally, in the church in this country.
Well, there's a greater responsibility there, but it doesn't minimize the responsibility of every believer.
Right. They should get up out of those churches and go and preaching the gospel.
And they're preaching the gospel, you'll find it somewhere else.
Yep.
The phrase dull hearing to me also implies that good teaching was available and they heard it. They just didn't hear it.
Yeah.
They weren't applying it.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't fault the leaders here. In fact, he says in chapter 13, obey your leaders. So evidently they have some pretty decent leaders, or he wouldn't tell them to obey them. Okay. And then, verse 12, it gets even worse. They need to learn again the basics of the faith. You need someone to teach you again, he says, the first principles of the oracles of God. So that's pretty bad. They evidently had forgotten virtually everything they had learned. They needed to learn again not only the good things of the faith, of course all of them are good, but the advanced things, they needed to learn again the basics of the faith. They evidently didn't know what repentance was. They evidently didn't know what faith in Jesus Christ was anymore. Because the author states later that those are the basic principles of the faith. And they need to learn these again.
Since many were out of Judaism, do you think the traditions, the dot the I and cross the T practices of the Sadducees and Pharisees was still confusing them as to what true faith was?
Yeah, it would have to affect them, yeah. I agree. Yep. And then in Colossians 2, we learn of all these other influences. So they did one time been in paganism and unbelieving Judaism. All right, also in verse 12 it says they can't handle any teaching the proper way because they need to learn it again. You have come to need milk and not solid food. They need to go back to milk. He has been giving them a little bit of solid food. And he was discerning that he wasn't doing them a whole lot of good. They didn't know how to handle the teaching in the proper way. You know, I could see in a couple of weeks us trying to feed our new granddaughter with a T-bone steak. Mm-hmm. It ain't going to work. And that's what these people, that's the condition these people were in. All right, the next little bullet there, they've lost their ability to grow because there was no constant practice. They weren't practicing righteousness. It says in verse 13, for everyone who partakes of only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. And then in verse 14, it says solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That is, those who by reason of use. Constant practice, as a lot of translations say. Constant practice have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. Not only were they not learning anything, but they weren't trying to apply anything to their lives. They weren't practicing righteousness. They weren't exercising discernment. There was no constant practice. You know, you use it or lose it. If you are working on some kind of skill and you stop for a year or two, you're going to lose that ability. And they no longer can discern between good and evil. And by this, I believe the author is talking both about ethical, they don't know right from wrong, and doctrine. They can't tell when a heretic's talking. Now, we talk about the ethical situation in this country, how awful certain people are. Well, this author says this in the church. You can't tell evil from good, just like the unbelieving culture around you. You blend it into them. You can't tell evil from good.
Well, you were saying, you know, the Greek there says, have no experience. You were saying that, you know, you have to be diligent. In other words, you have to put forth the effort to study. So if you're not putting forth the effort to do even in your secular job or whatever, actually there's no job, there's secular guys in every sphere. Yeah. It should be in industry and everything. But if you're not putting forth that effort, you don't have that experience.
Right.
And that's what it, you know, saying there. Mm-hmm. Now you're not skillful. And so therefore, you're unexperienced. You're unskillful. And you can't. You're not going to grow. And you'll never get to that full age, as it says. And in another, where it says that we're to labor, put forth work, study to show thyself approved a workman. So it's laborious. You're supposed to have to give Christ the preeminence.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you say this church had blended right into the world? Like churches tend to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think they had blended right into the world.
Yeah. And like the one gentleman said about being involved or surrounded by a lot of the Judaizers back then.
Yeah.
Would it be easy to be drawn back into slothfulness?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And also, several times it says, hold fast to your confession.
Mm.
You don't hold fast to your confession, you're wide open for heresies. See?
Well, in saying that the church become like the world, I think in this case, in the case of these Hebrews, this congregation, it seems to me there that the difference here is that it wasn't brought into the church as policy by the leaders. I think it was brought in by the rank and file membership who was very, very dull and could no longer make the sermon there. As opposed to, for example, some of the churches here in the United States where the leadership is bringing in hip-hop and different things like that to try to, quote-unquote, relate to it. I think in that might be a little different situation than here. I think it's, again, it's that if these
lay people,
yeah,
not like doing what they should do.
Yeah.
What we found, and I know that Pastor Charles can attest to certain things like that, and anybody here, modern day church is seeking experiential religion. If you don't have bingo on Thursday night, if you don't have something else, whatever it might be, just coming here and sitting down and studying this word is that's not going to attract a modern day person.
No.
They're looking for bowling on Thursday night and
coffee shops.
I don't know.
Coffee shop.
Jesus finger.
Unhappy.
Well, Bill, your comment about holding to your confession takes us back to your Hebrews. To one verse that you referred to, my Bible uses the phrase, lest at any time we run out. And, you know, before that it says, we have heard, lest at any time we run out. So in other words, they heard the truth, they knew the truth, but it wasn't being applied anymore. They were letting other things creep in and push it out of their lives.
Yeah.
Well, they had forgotten their confession.
And these, of course, should be warnings to us. Like I told Charles this morning, I've been reading the biography of Jonathan Edwards this week. And I'm thoroughly convinced I'm a totally undisciplined man after reading about him.
Yeah.
could be called lazy too, I guess.
Yep, neglectfulness. So, now we see the author has taken a break here from teaching, given them any solid food, especially on the teaching of the priesthood of Christ. So he's getting ready to go over the basic ABCs of the faith again. Okay, any other comments on 11 through 14?
No.
Yeah.
And this is in the context of us, the people in general, the lay people, just being responsible, and sad to say, in our congregation back in Virginia Beach, I felt starved in preaching the word, and so I had to get it elsewhere, and I was listening to preaching online, things like that. So and that's where we came across, people like Joe Moorcraft, of course, Rushman Moorcraft, and John Weaver, and others. But for me, in a large part, it was reading. And because so much of that work had been done for me, I read lots of Rush Dooley's books and other books from the Calcedon Foundation, for example. And so when I was teaching in the jail, and the inmates at times would ask me, how did you learn to understand all this stuff? And my simple answer was, how did you do this study? Did you go to seminary? So I said, No. I read Rush Dooley. What is it? And I said, you can do the same thing. You just need to spend the time reading. So that work's been done for us. I'm just so thankful to these men who put all this work in that we still have available to us. And now with the digital age, it's even easier to get to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a real blessing.
Yep.
When we hear the phrase, use the phrase, seeker-friendly churches, are these churches at least giving the milk of the word and not feeding those that are more mature, like you're referring to? Or are they just going for the entertainment factor, just trying to draw the numbers in? Or is it a mix?
It depends on which one you're going to.
Yeah.
But all of those above, yeah.
In this one church, we weren't members at the time because the Lord was bringing us into the Reformed faith. It was an EPC, not the lowest level of Reformed, I'd say. But in the church, the head pastor made the switch, a huge paradigm shift to this seeker-friendly thing. And when I mentioned to him, I said, coming for the Sunday service, we're just starving. He says, well, that's what the ones in the Bible study for the meat. That was his response. The weekend, the Sunday morning, that was given to the seekers.
Anyway.
Did he
give you chapter and verse for that?
Oh, yes, he did. And it was caught out of context, but it was First Peter, responding to those who are seeking, and give an answer that be ready in season. He says, but we're ready on Sunday mornings for the seekers, and you all more mature can get it on Wednesday nights. What you want.
I've never really been in a church like that. I've read about it. Like you said, you get knowledge from reading.
Well, and in that case, the pastor was really
like that.
Becoming what another chaplain who I knew had described as a tribal form of leadership in the church, where it's the king of the tribe, the village, makes all the decisions. And he also got the church in legal trouble, at least potential legal trouble on a real estate deal, and then skipped town to another position, leaving the congregation, leaving the whole church in just shambles. It was just terrible.
I've been in one or two of these seeker-friendly churches, mega churches, because people invited me. But I would almost get the idea that when a pastor or apostle or whatever he was up there getting ready to preach, lucky dipping. All right, today I'm teaching on the churches of Asia greet you.
Well, that's lucky dipping.
And then they say what they were going to say anyway, no matter what verse they got.
Yeah, there's no preparation.
Yeah.
It's topical preaching, off the top of your head.
Yeah, I like that.
What it is.
It really is.
I've done that because when I first got, when the Lord first saved me, we were in a charismatic church. Dispensational to the nth degree. So we've seen it all as far as that stuff goes. Thank the Lord that I met John Weaver 2 years later and the Bible came alive. Because when the Lord called me to preach, I had been down the road a couple years and had no seminary yet. And there were verses, you know, and obviously I was a rapture figure, so all this stuff. And there were places in the Bible that I couldn't go because it kind of predicted that doctrine. And it was like, this was really twisted stuff. And, you know, I met John Weaver in Indianapolis at, forget the fellow's name, the Baptist temple up there was being raided by the police and that, because of they wouldn't get licenses for their teachers and whatever. And John happened to be up there. And so the rest was history. And I think 2 or 3 years later, we moved to Georgia.
And you got some good solid food with him, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty well. You know, there was even no A1 sauce to go to the steak or nothing. It just went flat out. But yeah, man, it's been a blessing.
Well, yeah, it's always a blessing to have a good teachers and preachers.
And the same here.
Because there's so many places that don't.
Well, hundreds of years ago, you really didn't have a choice. You lived because the society wasn't mobile. Mm-hmm. And so that was your church because there wasn't any for another 30 miles. Stuck. With it.
Yeah. And transportation, even like you saying, even I don't know, even if you went back into the '50s, people didn't travel the distance they do today to go to church. I don't believe, did they?
No.
Even in the '50s, '40s, the further you go back, it was less and less. So you stayed confined to your geographical area within the distance, but.
Yeah, I know the church I went to was about a mile and a half from my house. Mm-hmm. I imagine most of y'all are pretty much the same way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, there, you know, some people drive an hour or two to church. Mm-hmm. And they could have a very good reason for driving that far. There's no Bible teaching church within an hour or two. Then they probably do need to move or either be willing to drive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Anything else on this? It's a good discussion. Because I think I'm going to stop there today because I don't have notes for y'all to follow. And it's a little bit after 10:30. And that's a good stopping place. So if anybody else has anything to say, go ahead. Charles?
The scripture also tells us that Paul writes that there's a situation where the people who attend the churches will not endure sound doctrine. Mm-hmm. So it's a kind of a two-edged sword. If you have people who aren't teaching sound doctrine, but then you have those who do, but people want the light shows in the modern context. It's interesting to see how some of these sort of mega churches have developed. Where we live in New York, there were several of those that cropped up over the 18 years that we were there, and probably the better known one was mostly light shows and, you know, really top-notch rock and roll music, you know, all the kind of stuff that goes along with that. But the preaching, I mean, I heard the preacher there one occasion, and he delivered what I thought was more a more biblical sermon than what I might have thought. But what happened was, around the same time as this one started up, another one did, and both of these were multi-campus. But what started to happen is that the people who would come into the one church that was more the rock and roll church, they started being siphoned off to the other one, which is just as much a contemporary, you know, bells and whistles type church. But the preaching was more solid. It was more expositional, expository preaching, but with all the other stuff added to it. And so they didn't plan it that way, but at a certain point, people just felt like, I need more than the rock and roll show every week. And so, but they like that. So they would go on to the church where the guy was a little more expository and preaching.
Well, interesting. In this EPC congregation that I was telling you about, with this pastor switched paradigms, before he switched, the reason we started going there, among others, was first of all, they were very politically involved. They were in trips over there, and the people were very active politically, having an effect in the community in that way. But he was preaching exegetical messages, which were excellent. And I guess we missed a week or something when we came back, and all of a sudden it was the first time he was switching to this new paradigm when I thought, what happened? And that's, of course, what happened. I changed it. So it was, I thought, a real... He just threw it away. The great... It was so good.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
You know, the conversation could go in the direction of the importance of church membership, too, because you need discipline in those areas. When somebody is a member and they're talking shades of heresy, then you've got discipline. If they're not members, you don't have any leverage over them other than asking them to leave or saying, don't come here anymore.
Yep.
So we've known people that hop from one church, never members anywhere. And we meet one couple in St. Louis for 20, 25 years. Never members anywhere. And they pop up here and there.
We've had a few pop up here and there here too. Over the years since I've been here.
Yeah.
Looking for that perfect church, I guess.
Yeah.
No. Well, is John Wheeler.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but they won't say anything to you if you're wrong.
Yeah.
Perfect church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look for a church with no hypocrites.
Eventually, it'll be perfect, but we're not there yet.
For a church with no hypocrites.
He was saying about finding that perfect church. I forget how it came up one time. John and I were studying or whatever. And he got on some subject like that, and John said, I think he had told somebody that it was a new, when he was pastoring in,
Jessup,
yeah. And he might have been counseling somebody, and he said, if you're looking for that perfect church, and you happen to find it, and you attend it, it would no longer be perfect. And that's true. Really.
Yeah, definitely a person needs to find a church for fellowship. You can see how important it is to have a church to be involved in as we go through Hebrews.
One more thing. My heart is just so thrilled to be here in this part of this congregation. But I have been praying. I've really been praying, just asking the Lord to show us as a congregation, because I know, you know, that there certainly can be, it can be beneficial to say, what can we do to reach out, you know, to make this desirable to people, and without slipping into the falsehoods there. But my prayer is that, you know, God will draw people here and give us wisdom to know how to bring people in, how to share with people, because, you know, I talk to certain people and really encourage them to come here. But I know for us it's a long drive, but we're motivated, you know, and people have to be, God has to move in their hearts to bring them. But I know I'm praying in that direction. So what we have here is so fantastic, so great, and such a blessing with Charles and with you leading. You all in leadership to be where we are theologically, spiritually. My heart's desire that God will bring people here.
Yeah.
Amen.
And grow us.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us share that desire. Hopefully, all of us. All right. Good discussion. And Kim, we'll have you close us in prayer for today.
Gracious Heavenly Father, we do thank you for revealing yourself in your word.